This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Format, but joining us right now is Mark Zuckerman. Zuck, of course, covers the Nats for Masson Sports at massonsports.com. You can follow Mark on X and on Twitter at Mark Zuckerman. So the Nats swept the Orioles. I just want to start with this. What happened to the Orioles this year? It's obviously a pitching issue, but they were supposed to be, you know, a playoff contending team in the American League East. They currently have, I think, the third or fourth worst record in all of baseball.
Yeah, well, it was a pitching issue this weekend, but I think it's an everything issue as far as the season goes. I mean, you name it, it's gone wrong for them. And, you know, I'm not around them every day, but what I've gathered, and certainly from being there this week and talking to a lot of people around that team, there was this sense that, okay, they've done such a great job of building an organization from within, some great draft picks, had the two outstanding seasons, made the playoffs, and then didn't do anything when they got to October. And it was time to take that next step. And what happened is they just sort of relied on all those young players to be able to do that on their own and didn't bring in the right kind of veterans to supplement them. And guys who've been through this before, I guess there's been a real lack of like leadership in the clubhouse. You put that all together and they get off to this terrible start. And the axe has to fall on somebody, and it goes on Brandon Hyde. But I think most people around there seem to agree that the managerial change alone isn't going to fix this. This is a larger issue than that. And, you know, I know around here you can still win a World Series after a terrible 2 months to start the year, but they're teetering at the point now where it's almost going to be impossible for them to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's so early in a season, but still, I mean, you look at the standings and you look at the way they're getting beat, and it's like, yeah, I know it's only 45 games in, and they're still going to go ahead and play the other, you know, 120, you know, 118 or 117, but man, it seems like a long and very tall hill to climb. So, on the flip side are the Nats, who were really struggling coming into this series. They had gotten absolutely annihilated by Cleveland, by St. Louis, by Atlanta. You know, they won that one game against Atlanta. And they exploded for 20 runs on 24 hits in the final two games. When they, you know, what we saw in two games, I understand part of it is the opponent. But is their capability this year, Mark, offensively greater than it was last year?
Oh, absolutely. And the biggest thing to look at is home runs.
Yes.
You know, they ranked almost last in the league or last in the league in home runs the last couple of seasons. They're right in the middle of the pack this year. You know, more home runs than games played. And that's a huge difference, because even if you have other offensive deficiencies, and you know, they still have their faults, particularly the depth of the lineup. You know, when you look at the bottom half of their lineup on a daily basis,
terrible.
It's really not what you would expect it to be. Yeah.
7, 8, 9 has really struggled.
Yeah. But what you do have on the top half are guys who can change the game with one swing of the bat. And when you can hit for power, you can make up for a lot of other deficiencies. I think we're seeing that right now. Now, the issue has been consistency, not being able to do it night in and night out. It feels like when they get to a starting pitcher early, they put up huge numbers. And when they don't, they just sit there for 6, 7 innings. You know, they went through that stretch where it was 8 straight games. They did not score more than 2 runs off any opposing starter. Now, sometimes they're better against the bullpen, and they've been able to come back and win some games late. But that's not a real formula for success. You got to be able to do it earlier in games against opposing starters. Well, they finally did it this weekend. Can they do it again? I guess we'll find out over the next week or so. It's a much tougher challenge with the Braves coming here now, the next 3 days.
They got 2 guys that are having pretty good seasons right now. To name a few, and I'm talking about offensively, but right now, Wood and C.J. Abrams, I mean, they're all-star possibilities, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Maybe even all-star, you know, I'm not going to say locks, but moving in that direction for sure. As of the other day, I think James fell out of the top 10, but there was a point that a couple days ago where Abrams and Wood were 9th and 10th in the National League in OPS. So when you got 2 guys at the top of the lineup that can do it all, and it's not just hitting for power, it's hitting for average, it's getting on base, it's running the base as well once they get on there, that is a truly dynamic duo. And, you know, James Wood, I think we all kind of had a sense that this could be the breakout year, and certainly he's done it. His raw power, his ability to hit the ball up to the opposite field in a way that maybe only Juan Soto does among players we've seen around here over the years is tremendous. But I think what C.J. Abrams is doing should not be overlooked at all. He was great last year in the first half, made the All-Star team, had an awful second half on the field, and then at the end of the season gets sent down to the minors, not for performance, but because of the whole issue of being caught late out at night at the casino in Chicago.
Right.
So there's a spotlight on him coming into this season, and he has done everything you could ask of him to do on and off the field and is now playing at an all-star level again. That is huge because I think that was a legit question mark and uncertainty coming into the year. He has brushed that all off and is playing like a true superstar right now.
Tell me about James Wood's, like, big time, you know, upside possibility. Is he a potential top 5 offensive superstar in this league?
Yeah, I think so. Because he combines patience at the plate, he'll draw his walks, with an ability to hit the ball as hard as anybody, and specifically to hit it to the opposite field in a way, like I said, you know, that Juan Soto does and very few others do. All but a handful of his homers have been hit to left field, left center field. And that's not a detriment at all. It's his natural swing to do that, and he still hits it as hard as anybody does. And so once he now starts to get into the habit of, okay, if he gets a pitch on the inner part of the plate and can turn on it and starts hitting some out to right field, which we've seen a couple of them, that's the complete package now, once you can do that. So he's already mastered kind of the harder part of it, being able to hit the ball the other way with some authority. He's still only 22 years old and hasn't even been in the big leagues for a full year yet. So the sky's the limit with him. And as I said, he also runs the bases really well. He takes his walks. He's maybe their most patient hitter they have. Defensively, there's still some work for him to do in the outfield. He hasn't always looked comfortable in left field. But, you know, we're picking nits here. I mean, what he's showing at age 22 is really special, and it shows you why, of all the prospects they got in the Soto trade, and they all had their upside, he was the one. I remember at the time, the saying was, hey, this is the guy who has every part of the game who could be a Soto-type player eventually.
Let's just, you know, project here. I mean, he is kind of on pace for certainly a 30-plus home run season, if not a 35-plus home run season, and 100 RBIs. Do you think he gets there?
Yeah, I think so if he stays healthy. And, you know, the RBI, sometimes that's also a product of who's on base in front of you.
Sure.
So if Abrams can keep doing it in front of him, that'll make a difference. And it brings an interesting point. CJ went on the IL for about 10 days with a hip injury last month, and Wood started hitting leadoff and was really good at it. And there was this question at the time of, should he actually be your number one hitter and get him up there and he can do it all, you know, right off the bat? And the thought was, yeah, he could do it, but if CJ Abrams is doing his job and gets on base in front of him, wouldn't you rather have a shot at a two-run homer than a solo homer from James Wood? And I think the answer is yes, and Abrams has done his part. So if Wood can keep coming up with guys on base, then you're talking about 100-plus RBI, you know, in addition to all the home runs and everything else. And, you know, I'll throw 30 steals into that as well. He could very easily be a 30-30 player this year and with the potential, you know, over the years to maybe even be a 40-40 player.
Yeah, currently his home run pace is actually to hit 40.5 if, you know, he plays all 162, which he probably will not, and there the pace may slow down a little bit. Dylan Cruz, tough start to the season, better certainly after that first few weeks. Tell me about his development.
It's been a little slower than I think
hit
most
and miss.
Would have hoped. Yeah, and when he's good, he's really good. And he crushed a ball yesterday, a three-run yeah. homer that had to be a shot of confidence for him. He still is swinging at a lot of breaking balls out of the zone. He doesn't get a lot to hit because pitchers sort of know the playbook now that you can get him to chase with breaking balls down and down and away. And until he proves that he can lay off all those pitches, they're going to continue to do that. So I think he's probably feeling the weight of some pressure of all this. I don't know that he's ever in his baseball life struggled to this extent. He's always been the guy everywhere that he's been. He's always hit at the top of a lineup, and now he's batting seventh or eighth. I think yesterday he even hit ninth.
Ninth
for
yesterday.
Them. So there's work to be done. But I think the most encouraging thing would be this. In spite of the offensive struggles and the inconsistency there, he has played an outstanding outfield, whether in right or in center, and he's been one of maybe their best base runners as well. And what that tells you is a couple things. One, that he is a very well-rounded player, and he's not just a hitter. But two, he's mature enough to separate those parts of his game. And when he struggles at the plate, he's not taking it with him into the field. And that's an important thing for a player at any level, let alone one as young and inexperienced as he is. So if he can figure out the offensive part, and it may take a little more work than anybody thought it would, but if he can figure that out, he's already got the other things there. He's a smart kid. He works tremendously hard. He understands the game, has great instincts. You know, he's still contributing to them in important ways, even if he's not hitting the way that they hoped he would.
We have focused on much of the positive. Now let's flip the script here with Mark Zuckerman. Starting pitching, you know, early in the season seemed promising, not so much since that point. What's happened?
Well, maybe coming back to earth a little bit. You know, Mackenzie Gore on his best days can look like the best pitcher in baseball, and then at times it falls off. But what he's done, you know, last year when it would go south on him, it could get ugly. And what he's done, and I think it's an important step for him, is that the nights that he doesn't really have it, he's still finding a way to limit the damage. And so it may not be those dominant, you know, 7 innings, 13 strikeout games, but he's holding them to 2-3 runs. So that's been an important step up for him. Jake Irvin has dealt with some velocity being diminished somewhat, which is a concern, except by all accounts, it's not injury related. It seems to be mechanics. But he went through a stretch there where in 3 starts, he only had 3 total strikeouts, which is pretty odd, even for a guy who doesn't strike out a lot of batters to begin with. So there's that. Trevor Williams, I think we kind of had a hunch that what he did last year might have been a bit of a mirage, and maybe he's not actually as good as that. So that was a concern somewhat. Michael Soroka missed time with an injury. I think he's looked pretty good since coming back. But the numbers don't always match up with that because he's struggled at the end of his outings by the time he gets to the 5th and the 6th inning, and it happened to him yesterday. So I think they knew this isn't a great rotation. The idea with these guys is, just give us a chance. Give us 5-6 innings, give up 3 or fewer runs, and then we're going to try to win the game late. outside of Gore, that's what most of those guys are. Gore has the ability to be an ace, and I think he may be an all-star this year if he keeps this going, because he does lead the league in strikeouts. But they haven't been quite what, you know, you would hope they could be, but I think they knew going in that wasn't supposed to be the strength of the team, to be honest.
So, you know, lots of complaining, and I think justifiably so, on what they didn't do and where they didn't spend and where they seem to be disinterested in spending. The learners, you know, if you kind of want to describe this as an influx, are they going to sell, aren't they going to sell situation? But if I told you that they did spend in the offseason, was there a chance, looking through the first 45 games, to spend to add a key offensive player, a key player from another area that would have made a big difference in their record?
Yeah, I think the two things they could have done, and this would not have had to have been, you know, over the top spending hundreds of millions of dollars, but just a bit more to make a difference. One more proven bat in the middle of the lineup, I think, would have made a difference. You know, their DH, Josh Bell, everybody loves him. He's a great guy, great teammate. He's on the tail end now. You know, yeah. He's not the hitter he was a few years ago when he was here the first time. They spent $6 million on him. That was a fairly cheap signing. They could have gotten a more proven DH that would help lengthen that lineup and take some pressure off the young guys that they're counting on so much. So I think that would have been one. And the other one is in the bullpen. And again, you don't have to go and spend tens of millions of dollars on relievers. It's such a fickle position that you don't really know what you're going to get from year to year. But they went out, the moves they did make, Lucas Sims already gone. They spent $3 million on him. It was a waste. Colin Poche on a minor league deal and got $1.4 million. He's already gone. That was a waste. Jorge Lopez, $3 million. He's still there. He's got an ERA in the sevens despite a 6-0 record somehow as a reliever. So just going out and getting some more established, a little more of a sure thing kind of relievers, and not a closer. Finnegan's been fine. He's not the problem. Right. The guy's getting the ball to him, going out and getting another lefty to account for the lack of when they traded Robert Garcia. A trade that's worked out because Nathaniel Lowe's been good, but they could have done that without breaking the bank, and I think it would have made a difference. I would still say at this point, they reasonably could and should have at least a 500 record right now, if not for the bullpen. And it's not that hard to fix a bullpen to, you know, you can build a good bullpen without spending a whole lot of money.
Talking to Mark Zuckerman at Mark Zuckerman on X on Twitter. Listen to his Nats Chat podcast with our good buddy Al Galdi and read everything that Mark writes at massinsports.com. So just real quickly, looking, you know, we're not at the halfway mark there, but we'll be there in a couple of weeks. Is there a dominant team in baseball right now where you say you'd be surprised if that team's not at least playing for an American League or a National League pennant?
You know, the National League, and I think this has kind of been underrated, has like five or six powerhouse teams, it feels like.
Yeah.
The NL West
especially
alone,
in the NL West.
Yeah, has been dominant. This isn't just like, hey, but it's the Dodgers and everybody else. No, the Padres, the Giants, the Diamondbacks, they are all really good, and that's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out over the whole season. The Mets, of course, with all that they did in the offseason, they have been what they're supposed to be, and that's a powerhouse. The Phillies are right up there with them, even though they have had their issues, including now one of their top relievers, Jose Alvarado, being suspended for 80 games for steroids. The Braves got off to a terrible start, but are starting to look more like themselves. And the Cubs have been kind of reinvigorated this year. That's a bunch of teams that are going to duke it out. And yeah, you can go into the playoffs and say, hey, the Dodgers are still, you know, the behemoths. But as you know, in a short five-game or seven-game series, anything can happen. And there are enough teams that can challenge them that could be wide open in the National League. On the American League side, it's not been what I think a lot of people thought it would be. The East, not as good, in part because of the Orioles' struggles. The Central is actually better than most teams would have thought. So there's more of a disparity now. It feels like the National League is tilted in their direction. And so, no, I don't think at this point there is that one obvious team. Yes, the Dodgers are going to be around come October, but there are many more teams that can challenge them right now than I think there were a year or two ago.
you know, I read every once in a while on social media that Mets fans are frustrated with Soto. He's not having a terrible season. What kind of season has he had?
Oh, he's been fine. And that's, you know, but this is what happens when you sign a $700 million contract, is that all of a sudden everything's under the microscope and you're expecting the greatest player in the world. I have never had any doubt that Juan Soto is going to be fine. And the good thing there is he can handle New York. We saw that with the Yankees. So the pressure of that is not going to bother him. That's more to do with Mets fans and just New York in general, and less to do with Soto. Now, he maybe has, you know, he's not playing with Judge anymore, although Pete Alonso's been really good. So maybe there's that. But, I mean, that team is in very good shape, and I wouldn't worry too much about how Juan Soto's going to end up there in Queens.
Thanks for doing this, as always. Hope you're well. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Mike Rizzo joins us, the president of Baseball Ops.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Snatch GM presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local, put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Junkies. How are you guys?
You're probably involved in all those cool events like food tastings and things like that at Nats Park.
I tasted a few items there for sure. I don't know if I'm involved in the food tasting per se, but...
He's got a nice spread in his suite.
Over 17 years I've been there, I've tasted just about everything, I would think.
Is there a go-to thing that, like, when you go to the game, you know you're probably going to have this?
You know, I go to, I get the chili, the smoke. You know,
The half smoke,
yeah.
Delicious.
That's my go-to.
What are your toppings?
You said at the ballpark, or at the restaurant.
So chili and what else? What else goes on Mike Rizzo's half smoke?
It depends who I'm talking to that day. What I'm doing, I'll throw raw onions on it if I have no one to talk to or nothing to do. Just chili and raw onions.
Or maybe if you're negotiating with Boris, maybe you do put extra onions on it.
It couldn't hurt.
Maybe.
It couldn't hurt.
Just right. A strategy, that's all. I'm just throwing it out there for free, Mike.
Well, how different is it nowadays in 2025 versus when you first were breaking into baseball? Like the setup for the players, nutrition before the game, post game, even probably during the game.
All right, we don't have to go that far back. It's we were pretty much in the Stone Ages until Jason Wirth got here and kind of flipped that thing around for us and taught us what the meaning of eating healthy and eating like a big leaguer was, and the spreads and that type of thing. And now we've done a complete 180. We're probably as good as anybody in baseball as far as, having our nutritionists pick our meals and cook our meals, and yeah, professional chefs do it at home and on the road. So we've come a long way in that regard.
So Wirth was like the guy who spearheaded that thing. That's interesting that it wasn't something from within the organization. It was an outside player that did it.
Yeah, it was when Wirth came over to us. We were at our infancy, obviously, of being a major league team, and he had come from championship clubs before, and he had a lot of good ideas, and we listened to him, and really turned it around into something that is a real benefit for us and attracts players. Our nutrition, our training table, our medical staff, and our training staff really is a recruitment tool for us, because they're known throughout baseball as being some of the best in the game.
All right, so let's get to the field. Dylan Cruz hits another home run, but then he's injured. Give us an update. And for all the people that are skeptical about Dylan Cruz because he's not even hitting 200, I saw a stat yesterday that amongst rookies, he leads the major leagues in home runs with 7.
Yeah, he leads amongst rookies. He leads a bunch of stuff, hits, runs, stolen bases, home runs. I think he's tied for second in a bunch of categories. The bad leverage isn't where he wants to be, but I think that comes when it's all said and done this year. He's going to have a heck of a year for himself, and he's a five tool talent, and the guy can play defense, runs the bases extremely well, throws extremely well, hits and hits for power, and I think it's just seeing him scratching the surface of what he can do, and after about 30 that we've played, that we've seen him play. I like the track that he's on. He's getting better. He's made two or three different swing adjustments throughout the season, and he's going to be a heck of a player for us.
So, we said it last week. We could say it again, actually. What a difference a week makes, right? 2 weeks ago, you guys were on a tear. Last week on a slide, boom, back to a tear again.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I described last week is, that's youth. That's a young team. It's the consistency of this. I've said it for years. It's like what separates baseball from other sports is every day. It's the everydayness of the sport that is so grueling, not only physically, but mentally. And it's, you ride a euphoria of, beating Strider in the Braves, last night. And now you got to turn around and do it again. You did it last night. Now you have to do it again tonight. So it's a grind, and young teams have to learn how to win those close games. And I think you see we're getting a little bit better at us. Of course, when your bullpen does what they're supposed to do, that helps. You win those close games, it keeps them close, or it keeps us with the lead. And I think you've seen over the last week or 10 days or so, some tack on runs when we're winning 4-3, and then you scored an extra run. It kind of alleviates a little anxiety and that type of thing, and gives you a little margin for error. So I see us. Doing things a little bit better. You definitely still need to clean some base running up and some defense up, but I think that we're playing a little bit better baseball, and we're certainly competing our butts off. So that's a testament to the coaching staff.
So fill us in on Robert Hassel. A lot of us have heard the name. Tell us about his game.
Well, he's a good. He's a really good all around player. Good defensive player. He's corner outfield because we want the flexibility with all our outfielders. So Hass is he's definitely capable of playing major league center field above average. He's got a really smooth, quick stroke from the left side. He's more of a gaps guy than he is a bomb guy. He's a hit tool guy before a power guy, but he plays all sides of the ball. Good base runner, fast base runner, base stealer, and a guy that is a really good looking prospect. And just coming off of two mediocre seasons because he had thumb, wrist surgeries and injuries. And you saw in spring training he had a full off season to not rehabilitate, but to prepare for the season. And I think in spring training, you saw, the results of that when he had healthy hands and healthy wrists, and he swung the bat really well in spring training. We sent him down for more seasoning because he really did miss a lot of the last season and a half, but went down there and continued to swing the bat well. Power came a little bit recently, and he's going to be a good player. He's earned a promotion, and we're going to see what Hassel's all about.
What was his deal? He was like initially like super highly rated, right?
Yeah, I mean, highly rated by who? We loved him. We want him in the trade, and he was.
When he was a high school kid, that kind of thing.
He was a first round pick in high school, and kind of got his progress was regressed a little bit by two seasons of which he wasn't healthy. So
right.
He's healthy now. He's a young 23, and he's chopping at the bit out of spring training to get here. And we just told him to be patient, do your thing down there, and you'll get here. And he's here, got a chance to be a really good player for us for a long time.
You got to be. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, it is what it is. But, man, you got to be thrilled with what you – I know you were happy at the time, but as you're seeing these guys pan out from the Soto trade, you never want to get rid of a player of Juan Soto's caliber and character. But, with Abrams, Hassel, Wood, Mackenzie Gore, at times can be amazing. Like, you have to be thrilled.
Yeah, it was a good return for a good player. And, I thought it was a good Major League Baseball trade. And it was something that we had to do, and we were fortunate to find a trading partner that met what we were trying to do, and they got what they wanted, and we got what we wanted, and time marches on, and now you're seeing that those four or five guys and Susanna's soon to be here also, it's going to be a trade that we had to make, and I think it's going to be looked upon as something that is going to be beneficial to the Nats.
Real beneficial. By the way, talk about what maybe some of the Soto's struggles or at least perceived struggles from the outside looking in. Do you have any thoughts? Is he still just the same old Juan Soto to you?
I have no thoughts about what he's doing presently because I haven't really seen him unless he's played against us. But Juan Soto, for me, was a great player that was a 21-year-old MVP of the playoffs and won us a World Series ring.
Yep. Worked out for you. Definitely. Thank you, Mike. It's Mike Rizzo, President GM of the Nationals, presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local. Bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. We'll talk to you next week, Mike.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right, pal.
He's focused on his guys.
Yeah, he couldn't care less about the Juan Soto drama up in New York City.
But he's old news.
When you look at that take, though, I mean, knowing that inevitably he was going to go.
Oh, that haul that he got was
Abrams,
looking pretty good for the Nats.
If Hassel play, ends up being like the number one first round pick kind of talent.
He was the eighth pick in the draft.
Mackenzie Gore. I'm telling you, I've seen Mackenzie Gore up close to the person a couple times. That guy's got it.
No, they're all good players.
Abrams is top 10 in like a lot of important hitting categories at this point.
Yeah.
Batting like 312.
I don't know about Susanna, but he said he's coming on too.
So. Saw both James Wood and CJ Abrams in the top 15 OPS now.
Yep. It's pretty good. It's pretty good return.
Nice that they're winning. Helps when you play the Orioles. I don't think they've won under the new manager yet.
Hey, they beat the Braves yesterday.
They did.
Team of their division.
So thanks again to Mike Rizzo, Nats GM.
Right now, we go out to the guest hotline for the first time this show. We find our pal Grant Paulson, the host of Grant and Danny, weekdays 2 to 6:30 over on 106.7 The Fan. Also the co-host of the Bustin' Loose Baseball Podcast with our pal Toby Altizer. You can download that wherever you get your podcasts. Good morning, my brother. How are you?
Linnell, what's good, buddy? How are you?
I am good. Doing a lot better after the way the Nats have been playing. Bobby Barrels last night. Robert Hassel, as you tweeted, became the first player in Nats history to record a multi-hit game and a stolen base during his major league debut. What were the vibes like last night at the park? And for you, someone who follows this thing super close, were you at all surprised by Robert Hassel being prepared for a big-time moment?
I wasn't surprised by the performance because it's a long time coming. He's waited 5 years for this. He was drafted out of high school at 18, Linnell, by the Padres, eighth overall. At that time, he was actually viewed as kind of a can't-miss, top-of-the-board talent, obviously, to go that high. But he was one of the better prospects in the game at one point in time because he's a complete player. You know, all the five tools are part of the tool belt for him. He can run. He can field. He's got some power, although I'd say at this point it's probably, you know, fringe average. He's more hit for tool with doubles ability going gap to gap. And he's a guy who's going to steal some bases for you. So I think he can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of years, he has dealt with a bunch of injuries. And because of that, his production has waned in the minor leagues. And, you know, frankly, I think he's not the prospect he once was because as he's played more and more, I think, you know, there are areas where you'd say, okay, there's nothing plus. There's not like this great carrying tool where he's got a 70 grade ability on a 2080 scouting scale. Like, he's not going to do anything at a really, really high level. He's just a very solid player. But to come up as experienced as he was in the high minors, double and triple A, he played more games at those two levels than most of the guys the Nats call up that are high-end prospects. And he had a great first game. As you mentioned, he had two hits. He actually got robbed in the ninth inning. Should have had a third hit. Michael Harris made a diving catch. His first hit came on the first pitch he ever saw on the show, which was awesome. He laced it right into right field, kind of stayed within himself, and it was just a really good approach. And then he immediately stole second and fueled a multi-run rally, a four-run inning. So really impressive game. He scored the game-winning run, by the way, coming around in the 10th inning as the courtesy runner at second and extras. So it's just a memorable night for him and his family, and it was good vibes to answer your question at the park, man. That's five straight wins for the Nats, six of their last seven. They needed this after a rough patch. They lost seven at one point last week without a win. So they're kind of erasing that with their winning streak right now.
Yes, they are. And, you know, you mentioned they're winners of five in a row. The big issue with this group to start the season has been the bullpen. They've actually turned a corner during this mini run as well. During their first 39 games, the bullpen's ERA 7.29. Their last 10 entering last night was 3.12. Do you think this team is turning a corner, Grant, or is it a byproduct of, you know, back-to-back series against, you know, the Orioles and a kind of a struggling Atlanta team?
No, I think they're playing a lot better because of what you just said. I mean, The bullpen has gone from being historically awful, one of the worst we've ever seen statistically, to that point in the season. I mean, that's not hyperbole. It was that bad. To pitching like a big league bullpen. And it's not just random. I mean, they've made a lot of changes. They got rid of two of the guys that were among their worst relievers early in the year. Lefty Colin Poche, righty Lucas Sims, who are no longer with the organization. And they have brought up some young arms that they've given a chance from their system in Jackson Rutledge, a former first-round pick, who was a starter they converted to the bullpen, and Cole Henry, a former second-round pick out of LSU, who was a starter they converted to the bullpen after a ton of injuries. And both of those guys have pitched very effectively. In fact, Cole Henry last night, Linnell, had a scoreless inning. He's pitched 15 times, and 14 of them he is not allowed a run. Now, both of those guys initially just got a lot of low leverage, insignificant innings, but they have now started to get more and more opportunities in higher leverage, which is very smart, and I think it has helped them a lot. And then, you know, they've been able to get the ball generally to their closer, Kyle Finnegan, who is a big league, legitimate, credible reliever, and he's had a very, very strong start to the year as a closer. So now you're talking about having kind of three guys you trust in their roles. They've added to their bullpen by getting their rotation a little healthier. Michael Soroka, who got hurt in his first start of the year and missed several weeks, is back in the rotation, which means Brad Lord, who was filling in out of the bullpen and into the rotation, is now back in the pen to give them some length, even though he scuffled a little bit. So when you add all that together, you know, then you could just get guys that have, you know, started slow that are improving, like Jorge Lopez, or, you know, Jose Ferrer goes from being maybe a setup man to the middle innings and a little bit of less of a, high wire act for him. It's worked out. So they're pitching a lot better. And when that happens with this lineup, they're going to win a lot more baseball games. I mean, they've got a serviceable rotation, and they've got a average-ish lineup. I've been joking all year that they're a 500 team with like a 60-win bullpen.
Yeah.
Right? So you add those two things together, and you're not near 500. But lately, they've been a 500 team with a 500 bullpen, and that's how you start to string some wins together.
With the record in mind here, and obviously it's just May the 23rd, so very, very early on here still, after last night's win, five games back of the final wild card spot in the National League, with things starting to come together for this bullpen, Grant, when you got James Wood hitting the ball the way that he is, C.J. Abrams off to a crazy start, Bobby Barrels now being called up, K-Bear, who we'll get to in a second, had a really special moment last night. He's hitting it well. Nathaniel, all I do is hit RBIs low, hitting it well. Do you see them being in this wild card race for the majority of the season, and what would they have to do by July's trade deadline for Rizzo and company to make a move as a buyer?
So I don't think that's realistic, raining on a parade here. I just don't think they're that caliber. But look, they've got a chance to change the opinion on that, and they get to decide that with how they play. I think they're short in the bullpen, as we just talked about. They're running hot right now, but, there's going to be cold stretches as well. I think, big picture, the frustration is they're a couple players away.
Yeah.
And they've been that for the majority of the last couple of years. And they certainly, this offseason, I think most people in the fan base knew they probably need one more slugger who can drive in runs and hit home runs, and they didn't do that. And they either needed a starter or a couple of relievers or both. And that doesn't, the relievers part doesn't cost you nearly as much money, but they just don't spend it anymore, really, or haven't in many years. Maybe they will again at some point. And so that's the annoyance for me, and the frustration for me is it's going really, the plan's going well. The baseball operation controls the rebuild and the trades, and let's make sure you get good players for Soto. Enter Wood, Abrams, Gore, Hassel. Let's make sure that James Wood becomes what he's supposed to. He's 22 and on pace for 40 homers and 110 RBI. He's going to be an all-star this year, maybe. Let's make sure C.J. Abrams repeats last year as an all-star. He's going to be an all-star for the second time at 24 years old, possibly. Let's make sure Gore takes another step. Every year he gets better. He's leading the major leagues in strikeouts on the mound right now. There's some really good things happening. You mentioned K-Bert Ruiz, who's made a huge leap this year and is really helping them out offensively as the catcher with the most hits and the highest batting average.
Which is crazy.
Plays think, every day.
Based off how last year went.
What's that?
I said the K-Bears turnaround, I think, is one of the more, really special storylines of the season based off of what he went through last year.
100% agree with you. All that's working out, and it's part of the plan, but where are my reinforcements?
Yeah.
The way I – it's a bad analogy, but, in a movie or something, when you draw up a battle plan, you're like, all right, you guys go in first, and you hold your own, and I want you to fight and scratch and claw and, bite kneecaps. And then right when you need us, we're coming over that hill. And it's like they did that, and they're looking back, but nobody's coming over the hill. They didn't sign anybody. They didn't go get the 30-homer, 100-RBI right fielder. They didn't go sign the starting – their starting pitcher is an oft-injured guy who's already been injured for the majority of the season. The relievers were $2 and $3 million bargain bin grabs who have been cut mostly. So it's like – when you play cheap games, these are the results sometimes. So that's kind of my frustration. I will say, though, you asked how could they do it. It's what you're seeing. If their bullpen with these young arms can pitch at a really high level, and C.J. Abrams, James Wood, and when Cruz comes back, who had homered in his last two games before he got hurt, or maybe it's Hassel, their young guys play at a really high level, then they're going to hang around. And then maybe Mike Rizzo goes, we're four games back. We're three games back. Why don't we go at a piece? We've got players that are expendable in the system. I just think it's a year early, and I probably wouldn't be in that business if I'm Rizzo. But it is possible. They just got to maintain what they've done over the last week, which I think is going to be difficult.
Nats winners of five in a row. They begin a weekend series against the San Francisco Giants starting tonight. You can hear that over on The Fan as well. As hearing our pal Grant Paulson, 2 to 6:30 with Danny Ruye. Grant, we appreciate you giving us some time, brother.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Good talking to you.
Yes, indeed. That is Grant Paulson. Make sure you check out the Bustin' Loose Baseball podcast with him and Toby Altizer
wherever you get your podcast.
Joining us now from Masson Sports is our guy, Bobby Blanco. Bobby, what's up, dude? How you been?
JP, B. Mitch, what's going on? Long time no talk. How are you guys doing?
Good. So my first question, last night they called the game off. With that weather, there was no way they were playing. They could have called that game off at noon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
I knew they weren't going to play that game. When you're in the baseball world, and you work a lot, and there's games every day, every night, what do you do with a sudden night off? What'd you do last night?
What did I do last night? I relaxed. I hung out with my wife and my son.
Okay.
We tried to get him down to an early bedtime and catch up on some TV. It didn't go quite as according to plan, but we got a couple episodes in or something.
He was like, "Ah, Daddy, you here. I'm playing with you."
Bobby was trying to get his burgundy shirt on. All right, let's
blue or red shirt, blue or red,
red shirt, a curly W. All right, let's get caught up to speed.
Bobby, JP's a fool. I'm telling you that.
The Nats are running hot. All of a sudden, that eight game losing streak was a killer. But I think they bounced back to win 5 of 6 and now 4 in a row. What is going better? The bullpen has now had a very small spurt of playing well. Is that possible to continue?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible. I mean, I think this bullpen right now, I mean, I know it was kind of a show to start the season, and it was statistically the worst bullpen of the year. And at that point, they were literally losing games for the Nats. They would be in it to the end, and then the bullpen would implode, and they would lose a couple of games. I think an interesting storyline for the pen right now moving forward is some of the young guys that are stepping up in Jackson Rutledge, Cole Henry, Brad Lord, Zach Brixey to an extent. These are guys, especially those first three, that have been starters their entire career and then just recently turned into relievers. Brad Lord still getting maybe a chance to start here or there, but right now he's back in the pen. But for Rutledge and Henry, these are two, you know, former first-round and second-round picks that couldn't make it as starters. They dealt with some injuries along the way. They fell down the organizational depth chart in the rotation. And so this year they made the decision to make them full-time relievers. And I think that is paying dividends right now. And, you know, they've always had stuff. They've always had really good stuff. It was getting deep into games that really troubled them. I mean, they couldn't sustain that success. So you figure, all right, if you're really good for their first one or two innings, why don't we try to make you a reliever when you're only pitching one or two innings at a time? And right now it's working out really well for them. I think it's a good organizational story for them if they can turn these guys into homegrown bullpen arms, because they're pretty young still. I mean, they're under contract for a while. I mean, I can't recall the last homegrown reliever that the Nationals had that, you know, became a mainstay in their bullpen for a long time. So if these guys become a part of that, I think that that's something they can build around, and they're getting more high leverage innings moving forward. We saw them pitch well over the weekend against the Orioles. I know those last two games were kind of blowouts, but yeah, they're getting a little more trust from David Martinez. So I think you're seeing them not lose games for the Nationals right now, which is a good sign. They're winning them for them, and especially those close games like you saw Friday night with Kyle Finnegan closing it down, stuff like that. So the bullpen seems to have definitely turned a corner, and that's a really good sign because this offense is starting to come along strong.
Let's talk about some pretty major personnel changes. Dylan Cruz sustained the injury the other night going on the IL. I still have to remind myself to say IL and not DL. Just going on the 10-day, so it doesn't seem like it's a really big deal. But they're bringing up Robert Hassel, who's a really intriguing prospect. There's been a lot of excitement about him. First, tell us about Cruz, how concerned we are with the injury from the other night, and then let's talk a little Hassel.
So for Cruz, there is a little concern, I would say. It's an oblique. They labeled it as an oblique strain, and those things are so, you know, hit or miss in terms of the timetable. Like, it could be ideally only a couple of days or just this 10 days that he's on the IL, or it could be weeks, God forbid months. So you never really know with these kind of oblique strains, especially with a hitter. He had felt it a couple of weeks ago, he said, and then it really kind of creeped up on him the other night. After he hit his home run, he did a check swing in his next at bat and had to come out. I think you can sense that there is a little bit of concern when they immediately started putting the call up for Robert Hassel in motion after the game or even during the game before it ended, because they'd figured that, you know, at the very least him or Jacob Young, who's also dealing with a shoulder injury now, was going to land on the IL, so they would need a backup. Which brings up Robert Hassel. I mean, you don't want to see a top prospect come up because of injury, but sometimes that's just the way it goes. When one door closes, another opens. So here comes Hassel. He was part of that Juan Soto trade. You know, at the time, he was considered, you know, one of the more sure thing prospects of that group. A lot of injuries have derailed his career since then. But talking to him in spring training, he was just very much in the mindset of, like, if I can stay healthy, I know I can perform. And that's been the case. If he's been healthy and on the field, he's performed pretty well. He's a great defender. He's a great base runner. He's had some sneaky pop to him, but can get on base and hit the ball pretty well. So I'm very interested to see how he handles his first major league stint. I know it's not the way that you would want to see him come up with Cruz going down, but on the injured list. But, you know, I mean, you got to take your opportunities when you're handed to him. So, you know, I think Mackenzie Gore is now with the rain out, bumped back to slate tomorrow. Tomorrow's opener against the Giants, so you could have four of the five prospects the Nationals got back for Juan Soto on the field at the same time, and Gore, T.J. Abrams, James Wood, and Robert Hassel, and then you can add Josh Bell to that as a DH. That's like five of the players that were included in that trade overall, which is kind of crazy.
How well has Gore been playing? I was looking at some lists which show how well he's been throwing as far as strikes, innings pitched per strike, or some deal like strikeout, I think it was.
Yeah, he's. I'm pretty sure he's still the major league leader, yeah. Maybe at least the National League leader in strikeouts. His K per nine is through the roof again. I mean, that's always been his MO. He's doing a really good job of that and limiting his walks. I think that's something that he really wanted to focus on this offseason and in spring training. Get the ball in the zone. Get guys to chase. Don't give up free passes. I mean, that line he had in Baltimore on Friday night was insane. It was like 10 hits, 9 strikeouts, but only 2 runs and like maybe 1 or 2 walks, but in only 3 2/3 innings. Like, it was like a wild final line for him. And that's kind of right now, like, I know that's crazy and I know that's not getting out of the fourth inning for your ace, but I think the key right there is not the strikeouts, but holding them to 2 runs. I mean, that kept the Nationals within that game, allowed James Wood to come up and hit that big home run late in the eighth inning to tie the game and then eventually win it. So, I mean, if he's not giving up runs and free passes, yeah, the strikeout numbers are sexy, but that shows to me that he's improving more on that department in terms of managing his game and his workload.
I get this email. I get like an MLB morning email just like taking me around the league that I like to read. And they did one on like the young stud up and coming pitchers. And Gore wasn't near the top of the list, but he did make the list. And it was just cool to see him on like a national look. We're talking with our friend Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports. You can give him a follow at Bobby_Blanco. Covers the Nats, does a great job doing it. We appreciate you making time for us, Bobby. I feel the need to say something that perhaps I shouldn't. And maybe I'm not even asking you to comment on this. I don't want to put you in a weird spot. It seems like we're going through this period of backpatting surrounding the Soto trade because a lot of the dudes they traded, they were able to acquire from the Padres end up being good, right? Abrams, Wood, bona fide studs. Gore looks like he's on that track. Maybe we get to see Hassel in the bigs tonight. That's all well and good. But, like, I already knew Mike Rizzo was really good at making trades. Still, trading away Juan Soto sucks. And the fact that we live in a market where everybody's just like, well, he's got Scott Boras. Nobody could possibly compete with Scott Boras. This team used to sign Boras, guys. They did. So, like, the fact that we all just want to, like, act like, oh, well, you can't deal with that. They used to do it. They did it with Strasburg, like, three different times. The problems, it just bothers me. It's like, oh, man, we did a hell of a job in that Soto trade. And that's great, but let's not act like the fundamental problem hasn't changed. Sorry, Bobby.
You don't spend money?
Yeah, and I'm not asking you to comment. I'm not putting you in a weird spot. I'm just screaming about it.
I think all things can be true, right, what you just said, right? Like, I think it can suck to trade Juan Soto at the peak of his powers after he won you a World Series. But it can also be true that it was the right move for the franchise and they got the right players back for it. And they're becoming bona fide, you know, major league studs right now.
Only the right move for the franchise because ownership refuses to pay him what he's worth, what the market will prove he's worth.
Well, right. But like, and that was what, a year and a half down the line from when they paid, from when they traded him. Yeah. So it's like, you know, if, they made him
I
that
love
offer,
Riz, which, dude. My beef is never with Riz. I hope that's clear. I think he's the best general manager this city has seen since Bobby Bethard.
Yeah, and I think Rizzo did the right thing given what he was told or offered, right? Like, in that situation.
Right. I just like him to be told something different, and I think it's worth reminding everyone that he's doing this because he's told to.
Sure, sure. That conversation probably went well. You know, if we're not going to, you know, he's not going to sign right now. We can make him an offer, but he's not going to take it. And if down the line you want to try again, that's fine. But if you don't think that he's going to sign here or you're not going to be willing to spend more there, then right now is the time to trade it. And he got the green light to do that. So I think all things can be true in that situation. Like, you know, and I totally get your anger. Like, the fan side of me, not when I'm working, but like the fan side of the Nats, you know, every time I see Juan Soto in a Mets uniform, I like cringe. Like, it's like,
yeah, this Mets stuff is tough.
It sucks. But then you also see that contract, and that is an absurd amount of money to pay a guy who's basically going to be a DH in a couple of years.
Dude, I think that's why there's a lockout coming in baseball. I think the Soto deal starting to flirt with $1 billion. Like, when will the lockout, is it 26 or 27?
Yeah, it's after next season. I have 26.
When we get to 26. The end of the 26th season and everybody's talking about the lockout, it's because owners are flipping out about the prospect of a billion-dollar contract. They got to limit the terms on these, like 15-year deals or banana land. That said, I am excited about watching the Nats. They're playing fairly well last night. So, in short, you seem more concerned about Cruz than maybe just the 10-day IL. Is that accurate?
Yeah, to struggle back a little bit, just because it's an oblique, and that's if it was like, you know, a wrist or I don't know, like a joint, something, or a bone, that like a bone bruise, something like that, that you can kind of tell will heal faster. An oblique's so tough, and with the way that how hard these guys swing, especially Dylan. I mean, he attacks pitches so hard, like you just never know. I mean, ideally, again, it could be something not that hard or not that difficult, and he can get back to playing in a couple of days, but sometimes these things just linger, and it already is kind of concerning that he had felt it like a week or two prior to re-aggravating it the other night. So it's something he's been bothering with. He didn't seem too concerned after the game, like Tuesday night. But, you know, the Nationals were already kind of putting him going to the IL in motion at that time, so they seemed a little more concerned than he was.
And then this is Hassel's legit big league debut, right? He hasn't had, like, a September call-up? Quick yes or no on that?
Nope, yep. Whenever he takes the field, it'll be his debut. First time.
All right, can't wait. Bobby, thank you. Sorry I started screaming.
Yeah, no problem. I enjoy it. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's our guy, Bobby Blanco. Give him a follow at Bobby_Blanco.
Speaking of the Nats, I was there. You were there. Tobes was there. Our buddy Chris Russell was there.
Who else was there?
Tens of people were there at that game last night.
Let's just name more people that were there last night.
Let's name the people. Really, really fun. The debut for the kid, Robert Hassel III, was awesome. Really, really neat. There's a couple cool stories from the game last night. Keber Ruiz's parents got to see him play for the first time. We'll talk about that. And I already mentioned Hassel. And there's another kid. Looks like he's going to join him in the big leagues pretty soon.
Yeah, so let's start with the Nats. We don't often, but right now they're rolling. They've won 5 straight games. They've pulled, for the moment, to within 5 games of the wild card in the National League, and they're just 4 away from 500 with wins in 6 of their last 7. They basically erased what was that wretched stretch that they had a little over a week ago where they had dropped 7 straight games. But they're doing it really twofold, I think. Starting pitching's been fairly consistent throughout the year. There are plenty of games like last night when Trevor Williams throws, or you know, you get a back of the rotation start and your starter's knocked out in the third or the fourth inning and it's not pretty. But for the most part, they're an average-ish rotation in the National League. The question becomes the consistency of the lineup, which with their young players on heaters right now has been great of late. They're hitting, they're scoring. And the bullpen's been the disaster. My joke all year long, as you know, has been it's an 80-ish win team with a 59-win bullpen. And when you add those things together, they're going to be in the low 70s in wins maybe. Well, the bullpen has actually been pretty solid lately. Last night, they were fantastic after Trevor Williams got knocked out of the game, pitching 6-plus innings. And I think what you're seeing, Danny, is when this bullpen pitches at a major league caliber level, this is a very competitive baseball team. For all the people that buried them early in the season and talked about how bad they were, yeah, when your bullpen is historically horrific, and look, they built a bad bullpen. They have made changes. They've cut some of the guys. Colin Poche, the lefty. Lucas Sims, the righty. They've brought players up from the minors who have helped, like Cole Henry and Jackson Rutledge, who are getting higher leverage opportunities now. But it's amazing how much different things look when the bullpen isn't a complete fiasco.
Now, you could point to some stats. Overall, for the season, it's still pretty bad. This is still the worst in the National League bullpen overall numbers. ERA 6.22. You look at the whip. Look at average against just under 300. That's for the season, by the way. So, in other words, if you only got to face the Nationals bullpen as the major leagues, you'd be a 300 hitter with a 900 OPS and a bunch of numbers that are alarming. Of late, you already mentioned some of the transitions, some of the changes. Brad Lord moving from fifth spot starter into a bullpen role. Had a wild moment initially last night, settles in, gets you an inning and a third to get you through that, to kind of bridge the game, get to the rest of the guys. Other players moving into different roles, some ascending, some descending. Now all of a sudden you start to get the feel. Nobody's sitting here telling you you've got the nasty boys from the Reds in the late 80s, early 90s. But this is a viable group that's fine. And you're going to have a weak link when you don't spend $1 trillion. That's their weak link still. But it ain't a disaster like it was all of a sudden, and they can win games like last night.
Yeah, I'm capable of having two discussions at the same time. I'm not moving on from the fact that the offseason from ownership wasn't good enough, that there was not enough money allocated to the front office, clearly, that they weren't willing to spend on the big bat that I would have liked in right field or at first base, you know, to go hit home runs and drive in runs. That they weren't able to add a starting pitcher, the likes of which I wanted to. You know, everybody laughs at the idea that Washington could have gone and gotten like a Max Fried, who's been sensational for the Yankees. Why couldn't they have? It's the 2025 version of going and getting a Max Scherzer type player. They used to do it. They don't anymore. So forget that, because that's just such an elite player to bring in. But any kind of real, true, legitimate upgrade to the rotation would have been nice. They spent $7 million on Trevor Williams, who last year pitched well, but was 4 innings, 5 innings at a time, and a five-and-dive guy that you got to get out of the game, and that taxes your bullpen. And he's regressed substantially since last year, as you saw again last night. So if you just spent a little money, couple of relievers, starting pitcher, a bat, you're probably a 28-29 win team right now. You're a wild card team at this moment, because the plan is actually working in terms of the baseball operation. In terms of the build, the Soto deal, a gift that keeps on giving. The development within the system of the players like James Wood, who at 22 years old is on pace for 40 homers and 110 RBI. C.J. Abrams, who's playing the best baseball of his career and gets better every year and now is about to be a two-time All-Star at 24. Mackenzie Gore, their starting pitcher, has literally gotten better every single season in the big leagues and right now leads the major leagues in strikeouts as he gets ready to take the mound tonight. It's working internally,
yep.
But you need those reinforcements. I called in to Linnell today. He asked me to come on to talk Nats, and I was thrilled to do it. Five-game winning streak. Let's chat about him. Everybody in town should be taking notice of how good these young players are. But the analogy I used for him that I like and may use again is it feels to me like the battle of the big league season for the Nationals, this war that they're fighting, the battle plan was we sit around the table and we get our marching orders. And you go to James Wood and C.J. Abrams and Mackenzie Gore and this core that Rizzo and Schlaba and DeBartolo and the front office built, and you say, we need you guys to scratch and claw and fight and give them hell. You're the first line. You're the first group in. And right when it's not enough, you guys don't have enough yet. We get that. But we're going to come over the hill with the next wave, and we're going to take them out. And the next wave is my 30-homer right fielder. The next wave is my 27-homer first baseman. The next wave is my number three starter in free agency. And they're doing their thing. They're down there giving them hell. This is the newsies with Spot Conlon. We're putting people in headlocks and giving them noogies and Abrams and Wood and Cruz and the young guys. They're doing their job. And then they turn around right as they're starting to get overtaken going, it's okay, here comes the cavalry, but there's nothing coming. And so that is my annoyance. And I will keep my eye on that target. The lack of spending, the inability to push this over the top with veterans should not be forgotten, in my opinion. We got to keep our eye on that. But in season now, it's a different thing watching and evaluating day in and day out, Danny, with this Nationals team at 23-27, 5-in-a-row, 6-of-7, the kids playing the way they are, star power starting to take hold with Wood and with Abrams. This is a fun watch, and getting out to the ballpark is as good as it's been in a few years.
And even kind of game within the game type stuff, even games they don't win, and they've won 5 in a row, and they deserve credit for that, there's always a punchback. Even if it doesn't end up in a W, when Trevor Williams gives up back-to-back homers in the first, there's no thought of, all right, fine, let's pack it in. San Francisco's coming to town. You know, this is going to get away from us real quick. The Braves have our number today. Matt Olson owns us. He homers every other game against us. This is going to be a deluge. They punch right back, scored one, had a chance to score more, scored four in the second. Here come the Braves, take the lead. Doesn't matter. They punch back. In the ninth inning, a blown save after an error. Instead of, again, hanging your head, they execute a perfect relay to cut the win, what would have been the winning run down at home plate, give themselves a chance, get out of a jam. They just keep coming. They keep fighting. They keep punching back. And it's a grind out, do what you can. I mean, they're even game within the game type stuff. There are at-bats that don't go your way. I think it was Jose Tana last night. Had like a 13-pitch at-bat resulted in a flyout. But that's the kind of thing where you go, that's competing right there at the highest level. Jose Tana's not part of the future. He's not. He's here for now. He's a nice utility piece. He's hadn't played a ton of games at third base, but he's getting better over there. Unfortunate for him that it results in that ninth inning where he kicks what should have been the game-ending double play ball. That dude is part of this culture now, and their culture is, I think you said the word, it's scrappy. It is you might beat us. In fact, the numbers say you're going to. Not without a fight, though. We are going to bother you. We're going to be the pain in the butt. I think that's the first step, learning how to compete at the highest level before you start winning at the highest level. And they're doing some of that right now.
And they've been doing that part for years. You get more talent, and more of those losses turn into wins. And you're seeing that as we go forward with this build. But to me, that is a staple of the Davey Martinez operation. You're not ever dead. You're going to battle for 27 outs. The cliche eye roll stuff that people that are cynical that don't care or don't watch the team are going to go, oh, I'm sure. But that is the Davey Martinez managerial staple. Now, there are other staples with the Martinez regime that aren't as fun. Things like the lineup will never, ever, 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 ever be the same two straight days, basically. Or certainly three straight days, right? That's just not going to happen.
What time's the base running clinic?
The outs on the base paths. Is he your manager? Then the history says they will run into 9,000 outs on base. And seemingly nothing will be done about it in perpetuity. So those things, it's all part of it, right? Right. But he is beloved in the clubhouse. He runs a very upbeat, positive clubhouse. It's a very tight-knit group. And they scratch and they claw for him. Yesterday at the ballpark, the big story was Robert Hassel, who makes his major league debut. You referenced it. He became the first Nationals prospect called up to ever have two hits and a stolen base in his major league debut. The 23-year-old who's been waiting 5 years since being the eighth overall pick in the draft back in 2020 for last night had to wait an extra day because of a rainout. And then the first pitch he ever saw in the major leagues, the kid they call Bobby Barrels got the barrel on it.
Robert Hassel! Nice hand for a rookie making his big league debut. Many Nationals fans on their feet standing for him. A 23-year-old digs in from the left side of the plate facing A.J. Smith-Shawver. The first pitch to Hassel is a line drive, base hit right field. He's batting 1,000. Robert Hassel III turns around a 98-mile-per-hour fastball on the first pitch he sees in the major leagues. He gets a hug.
Attaboy Robert Hassel, attaboy Dave Jagler. That's a good call there on the Nationals Radio Network. Has heard right here on 106.7 The Fan last night. He immediately stole second at 9 steals in the minors. Is a speedy guy. I've talked to him over the years many, many, many times, and he's always talked about wanting to run more and be more aggressive, and that's been added to his game as he's gotten closer and closer to the major leagues, and it's going to be a factor. You know, if he wants to stay up here and really help the team, being an athlete, showing speed is going to be part of that. Right now, this moment, he's the best center fielder on the big league roster, probably, because Dylan Cruz is hurt, and Jacob Young is on the injured list as of today. So he started in center. He hit seventh last night. In addition to the two hits, by the way, one was he went the other way against the shift and would have been like a routine ground ball to the third baseman if they weren't shifting him, but it gets through down the left side. The other was that well-struck base hit to right, and he got robbed in the ninth.
Michael Harris is a predator.
He's a beast.
He takes away so many hits from people.
In that inning alone, the ninth inning, he made a play on, was it Ruiz?
Garcia.
Luis. Louis crushes a ball to right center, and Harris tracks it down. The guy covers ground like a Doppler radar. He runs into the fence, and then 2 minutes later is coming in sliding toward the infield to take away the Hassel hit in both directions. He was awesome. But Hassel should have had three hits.
Mm-hmm.
He had two runs, including the game-winning run last night because he was the courtesy runner at second to start extra innings. You can't have a better debut than that. Just happy for him because it was a long time coming.
Yeah, nobody's ever done that. I mean, what he just did last night, no one's ever done it. You saw the full skill set on display. That thing is so cool. I was, again, doing the postgame with Charlie and Dave last night, just talking about it. This is actually a little bit more normal that a guy would get drafted out of high school, take a handful of years to grow up, kind of become a man, both maturity-wise, physically, as you lift weights and exercise and all those kind of things, you kind of grow into your body. This is now atypical. Because of how well schooled and how skilled some of the kids that are coming up are, they're more big league ready at younger ages, by and large, than has ever been the case. With coaching's better, access to facilities is better, everything's better for these guys that were at 10, 11, 12, instead of your dad going, get your elbow up, son. It's like a professional coach who's there working with you on everything under the sun. So it's unusual to have him take, quote, this much time for a prospect drafted in the top 10 to get to the major leagues. He's dealt with adversity, had a bunch of bounce backs. You and I have gotten to know him a little bit over the years, and he has that exact right balance for me, mentality-wise, between the no-doubt-about-it confidence that I belong here. I belong. Regardless of the setbacks, I belong. Right up to that line of what some might perceive as arrogance. I don't think he's arrogant. I think he has a confidence about him and an understanding. I haven't done anything yet, but I belong up here. And he gives that off, kind of gives off that energy as a player where nothing's too big for him. And it really, really impressive debut last night. Really happy for him, man.
So he debuts last night. Today we find out that Jacob Young is joining Dylan Cruz on the injured list, the other of the center fielders who's been banged up. That means that Dalen Lyle, another outfield prospect at the AAA level, got promoted to the big leagues today. Lyle, who's actually, according to MLB Pipeline, ranked higher in the Nationals prospect rankings at this point, a 22-year-old, is a really exciting kid. This is one of my sleeper prospects in the system for a couple of years. He was drafted in the second round in 2021 with the 47th overall pick. He's probably the fastest player in the system. Andrew Pinckney is right there with him, but I think Lyle, in terms of running the bases, might be their fastest guy, going first to third. He's one of the leaders in the minor leagues in triples over the last couple of years. This year, he's been magnificent. He's hitting .337 with a .900 OPS. At AAA, he's hitting .360 in 18 games since being promoted. So he's only spent 18 games above AA in the minor leagues. And if not for an injury, he wouldn't be up. So it's very possible that it's a quick cameo, a look-see. He gets a quick opportunity. And then when everybody's healthy, they send him back down because he's only 22 and he hasn't been in AAA a lot. But when you get the call, it's your opportunity to show I'm not going back. And so with Robert Hassel, who got off to the fast start, if he plays really well, you're going to stay in the lineup. You know, if Dalen Lyle, I just imagine he'll debut tonight. Why call him up if he's not going to? If he starts and produces, they're not sending him back. They're in the business of winning games. But he's a really, really fun player. A hit tool over power.
Mm-hmm.
But he has, I think, been their most accomplished average hitter in the minor leagues over the last couple of seasons. He's got a good approach. He's very fast, as I mentioned. I think he can beat things out on the ground. He could turn singles into doubles. Defensively, he plays all three outfield spots, but he's best off in left long-term. He'll play right now because James Wood's entrenched in left field. He could play center for sure. He does in the minor leagues.
Athletic enough, certainly, yeah.
From time to time. But arm strength and stuff, I like him best in left. But now you got questions as to long-term how this all looks because these guys are all getting ready at the same time. And it's a huge test, not only for the front office, but for Davey Martinez when everybody's healthy. It's easy when Cruz and Young aren't available.
Mm-hmm.
But when those two guys are now healthy, do you send Jacob Young down to the minor leagues to AAA? Elite defender who hasn't really shown he can hit to the level that you want at the major league level. I work back from what is. And what is, James Wood's going to play every single day in left. What is that Dylan Cruz needs to play every single day he's healthy in either of the other two positions. And if it's not Jacob Young in the big league, he should play center every single day. So now you're looking for your right fielder. And that's Hassel, or that's Lyle, or that could be Alex Call. And I would imagine it's Hassel or Lyle. And then the other one probably should go back to AAA where they can play rather than having Alex Call sent down and that guy sit on the bench. That would be my guess.
Right.
But they got to sort all this out because you look up 95 at the Orioles, they had a bunch of guys get ready at the same time, and they screwed up a lot of players' development, in my opinion, because they were all ready to play, and there was no spot for them, and they didn't trade any of them. And so you look at, like, Kobe Mayo still in AAA, was just rotting at this point and completely been hindered in his development. Heston Kerstad, I think they did a disservice to as well in the same way. So it's a huge challenge, and it's a great problem to have. This is what you want.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, don't get me wrong, I mean, this is going to go one of two ways here over the next several months. My guess is you got to find out this year who your other guy is with Wood and Cruz, and then the other one becomes expendable for a trade chip this offseason when you try to go get some pitching. And you can use the next 100 games to sort all that out however you want to.
Yeah, I think it's very well put by you. That's a good summary of it. The danger is to be static and do nothing and just sort of say, well, the problem will work itself out. No. Proactive. But at the same time, be open to different possibilities. For the sake of argument, if Robert Hassel takes this opportunity and runs with it, congrats to new right fielder Robert Hassel each and every day. I got, you know, no issue with that. Or maybe it's Lyle who provides a lot of the same things that Call might, but at a higher athletic level, just in terms of his sprint speed and some of the tools that he's got. Call's a lot of grit and guts, and I'll do a little bit of everything for you. Dalen Lyle is that plus a higher profile to me, right? Or just at least a higher ceiling ultimately. So there's nothing written in stone at this point. This is not a 100-win team where you have to go with the guy that's going to help you tomorrow. There's still a long horizon, even while you're competing and winning some of these games.
And to that point, it's not like these guys are at a level, other than Wood and Cruz, where you can't send them back to AAA using an option and continue to further their development, playing every day that way. It would certainly make more sense for Lyle, who's a year younger and way less experienced in terms of games, than Hassel. But I don't think that would be the end of the world if that happened for either of these two guys. Just their performance is going to dictate it. But I do have to say, and this will be the most predictable thing ever, while all respect to Alex Call, who's a really good dude, long term, he's irrelevant in this big picture for me. So him, I set him to the side and go, if there's a spot for you, we'll call you. But I've got to figure the rest out around these guys.
Absolutely.
And you mean the least. So this is about, in this order, Wood becoming the best player that he can, Cruz becoming the best player that he can. I actually think Lyle's the next guy, more so than Hassel, but they'll be able to battle for that distinction.
Mm-hmm.
Then Hassel, and then Young in that order. And you got to figure out, like, who between Wood and Lyle and Hassel, rather, is one of them going to get you more on the open market?
There are three outfield spots. You just named five players.
Exactly. I mean,
there's the rub, right?
Now, everyone wants to move James Wood to first, not a thing. They want to DH him, not a thing. That's an outfielder who should play in the outfield. You don't make a 22-year-old a designated hitter who's immensely athletic and has brilliant speed. So he should be playing in the outfield. If you want to DH him once a week or something just to get him off his feet and keep him healthy, I'm fine with that. I would say the same about Dylan Cruz when he comes back. And, you know, you could rotate through your outfielders right. and get all these young guys off their feet to DH for a day or something. But in terms of full-time, Wood every day, Cruz every day. Those are the suns in the solar system we're rotating around. And let's figure the rest out around them.
I would mix in James Wood just getting some reps at first for another lineup construction thing, but I'm not majoring in it. Just as an option is all I'm saying. Because I think that someone who's that athletic and that gifted can, you know, hide over there for a day as part of a series.
Maybe.
But it's along the same front as having him DH once every 10 days just to make sure his bat's in the lineup, but he's kind of off his feet, quote unquote.
Yeah, I think it's a gigantic waste to have that good of an athlete at first base.
I'd agree with
you. A guy that came up playing center field. And I'm not doing anything with James Wood again, like averse to where he's at his best or what's best for his offensive. Like working that much defensively behind the scenes takes away from some of your offensive approach and stuff. Why am I doing that? So that I can get at bats for Dalen Lyle? Like I'm not respectfully, no. I mean, if he wants to do that in the offseason, if you want to at the end of the year say, hey, you know, we got a lot of outfielders, we have no first baseman of the future. We don't spend any money. We're going to put you at first, so learn it. I guess we could have that conversation. I still don't like it, but in season, I would not do that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those easy as pie things. You can take a couple of ground balls here and there. It's not taking away from anything, but I see your point in general. I mean, to me,
so you just take a few ground balls and then you play him there, or is he just doing it for sport?
Because that's the only, there are two spots I think that are the easiest in the sport to learn, left field and first base. So, to me, that's one of those, he's so athletic, it's so good, I'm not going to major in it. It's probably a end of a road trip type game or something where if I've got to do it, I would do it. But, again, I'm not sitting there and having him learn the intricacies and drill for hours and 100 different sessions and working with position coaches and all sorts of stuff. I mean, they're having Jose Tanner, who played 5 games since high school at third base, start at third base every day. So, like, he's such a world-class athlete, he can do it. But my point is, with Wood, I'm trying to figure out long-term, maybe a solution. And it is overkill to have a guy that's that athletic at first base, but there are 3 athletes that might be better and rangier as outfielders that I might end up playing instead long-term.
So Jose Tena means nothing to them long-term. So I can move him. He's a utility guy. If he's going to stay in the big leagues, you're going to move him all over. Everything I do with James Wood would be about A, getting the most out of him. Where is he at his best? Where is he most comfortable? And B, also my relationship with him. I'm trying to make this a 15-year relationship.
That makes sense, too.
Hey, 22-year-old, do you want a DH? No. Okay. Do you want to play a position you've never played before? Like, moving him for the other guys is, it would be like telling the junkies, hey, we need your parking spot because the dude that's coming in on the weekend to do overnight.
There's a board out that likes to park up front.
Yeah. It all starts with what is James Wood's best situation.
That's a good consideration.
And I don't think it's at first base. But this is a really good problem to have, and damn if it's not very different than what it was a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, the proof is in the pudding that the process is working. If only they could spend a little money and add to these young players.
That means money leaves.
Leaves where?
Where it is.
Oh.
See, it's currently somewhere. Maybe there's no money. I don't even know. But like the money would leave.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.